Chapter 2. There is absolutely no point in learning to read when you can smell meat from a verst away anyway. But even so, if you live in Moscow and have any kind of brains in your head at all, you'll learn reading willy-nilly, and without any evening classes either. Of all the 60,000 dogs in Moscow, only some total idiot couldn't put together the letters to make the word salami. Sharik began learning by colours. He was only just 4 months old when they hung greenish-blue signs all over Moscow with the words MSPO, meat sales. Let us repeat, this is all pointless because you can smell the meat anyway. And once there was a real mix-up, when engine exhaust fumes had played havoc with Sharik's sense of smell. Taking his lead from the acrid bluish colour instead of a meat shop, he wandered into Golubitsyna Brothers' electrical accessories shop on Mesnitska Street. At the brother's place, the dog got a good taste of insulated wiring, and that stings worse than any cab driver's whip. This portentous moment should be regarded as the beginning of Sharik's education. Back out on the pavement, Sharik was already beginning to grasp that blue does not always mean meat. And as he squeezed his sore and smarting tail between his back legs and howled, he recalled that on all the meat shops, the first mark on the left was a sprawling gold or reddish shape that he thought looked a bit like a sledge. M. After that, he made even better progress. He learned that the SH in Moss Fish on the corner of Mahavaya Street and then the I, it was more convenient for him to come running in from the tail of the word fish, because there was always a militiaman standing at the beginning. Little square tiles facing the corner spots in Moscow always invariably meant cheese. The black tap of the pot-bellied samovar that came at the front of the word signified his former master, Shishkin. Mountains of Dutch red, brutish shop assistants who hated dogs, sawdust on the floor, and Backstein cheese with a rotten smell. If they were playing their accordion, which was not much better than Sweet Aida, and there was a smell of sausages, the first letters on the white posters formed themselves very conveniently into the phrase "no swear," which meant no swearing or tipping aloud. Sometimes here, fights would flare up and spread rapidly and people got punched in the face, though only in rare cases, but they always lashed at dogs with their napkins and their boots. If there were stale joints of ham hanging in the windows and heaps of mandarins, it was a grrr, grrr, grossus. If there were dark bottles of bad liquid, that was woof, 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 wine. The former Yeliseyev Brothers shop. The unknown gentleman, who had dragged the dog to the doors of his luxurious apartment located on the Piano Nobile, rang the bell, and the dog immediately raised his eyes to the large black plaque with gold letters hanging at one side of the wide door glazed with wavy pink glass. He put the first three letters together straight away. P-R-O-PRO. But after that, there was some rotten thing with branches like a tree. He had no idea what that meant. Couldn't be a proletarian, could he? Sharik thought in amazement. That's not possible. He lifted up his nose, took another sniff at the fur coat, and thought reassured, no, not a whiff of a proletarian there. It's some learned word. God only knows what it means. Behind the pink glass, a sudden joyful light blazed up, casting the dark plaque into even darker shadow. The door opened without making any sound at all, and a beautiful young woman in a white apron and lace cap appeared in front of the dog and his gentleman. The dog was bathed in a wave of heavenly warmth and caught the scent of lily of the valley from the woman's skirt. Right, that's the tops, that I understand, the dog thought. After you, Mr. Sharik, the gentleman said ironically, and Sharik proceeded reverently, wagging his tail. The splendid hallway was cluttered by a huge number of items. Sharik was instantly impressed by the mirror stretching right up to the ceiling, which immediately reflected a second Sharik, dog-tired and dilapidated, the terrifying reindeer's horns way up high, the countless fur coats and galoshes and opal tulip with electric light in it in the ceiling. "Wherever did you find such a creature, Philip Filipovich?" the woman asked with a smile as she helped remove his heavy silver fox fur coat with a bluish gleam. "Good grief, what a mangy cur!"
"Don't talk nonsense. Where is he mangy?" the gentleman asked with curt severity.
With his coat removed, he was left in a black suit of English cloth, with a gold chain twinkling in subdued joy across his belly. "Wait a moment. Don't fidget. Stop fidgeting, you little fool. That's not mange. Hey, stand still, you devil. Aha, that's a burn. What scoundrel scolded you like that, eh? Stand still, will you?" "A convict cook, a cook," the dog said with its plaintive eyes and howled gently. "Zena," the gentleman ordered, "take him straight into the examination room and bring my surgical coat." The woman whistled and snapped her fingers, and after a moment's hesitation, the dog followed her. The two of them entered a narrow, dimly lit corridor, walked past one lacquered door, reached the end, then turned left and found themselves in a dark little room, to which the dog took an instant dislike because of the ominous smell. The darkness clicked and was transformed into blinding day, and on every side things glittered, shone, and glared white. "Oh, no," the dog wailed to himself. "Sorry, but I won't let you. Now I understand. Damn them and their salami to hell. They've lured me into a dog's clinic. Now they'll make me drink castor oil and rip my side to shreds with knives, when it already hurts too much to touch anyway." "Oh, no, where are you going?" shouted the one they called Zena. The dog twisted around, coiled up like a spring, and suddenly smashed his undamaged side against the door so hard that the whack could be heard all through the flat. Then he flew back and started spinning around on the spot like a top under a whip, tipping over a white bucket and sending lumps of cotton wool spilling out across the floor. While he was spinning, the walls lined with cupboards full of gleaming instruments flitted round and round him, the white apron and contorted woman's face began jumping about. "Where are you going, you shaggy devil?" Zena shouted desperately. "You blasted nuisance!" "Where's their back staircase?" the dog was thinking. He took a run at random, bundled himself up and smashed into glass, hoping it might be a second door. Slivers of glass came showering out, clattering and tinkling, and out jumped a fat jar of some reddish bilge that instantly flooded the entire floor and started giving off a stink. The real door swung open. "Stand still, you brute!" the gentleman shouted, jumping around with one sleeve of his white coat pulled on, trying to grab the dog by the legs. "Zena, you hold him by the scruff of the neck, the rascal!" My goodness, what a dog! The door opened even wider, and another individual of the male sex entered the room wearing a white surgical coat. Crunching the broken glass as he went, the individual dashed across, not to the dog, but to the cupboard, opened it, and the whole room was filled with sweet, sickly smell. Then the individual dropped belly down straight onto the dog, and the dog fervently sank his teeth into him above the laces of his boot. The individual gasped, but kept his presence of mind. Some nauseating muck choked off the dog's breathing. His head started to spin. Then his legs gave way, and he skidded off crookedly to one side. "Thank you. This is the end," he thought dreamily, toppling over straight onto the sharp splinters of glass. "Farewell, Moscow. I'll never see Shishkin or any proletarians or crack of sausage again. I'm going up to heaven for all my doggy sufferings. Oh, brothers, you knackers, why are you doing this to me?" And at that point, he finally tumbled right over onto his side and croaked. When he rose again from the dead, his head was spinning slightly and he had a vaguely sick feeling in his stomach. But it was as if there'd never been anything wrong with his side. It was sweetly silent. The dog opened his languid right eye, and out of the corner of it he saw that he was tightly bandaged across his ribs and his belly. "They've done a job on me anyway, the sons of bitches," he thought vaguely. "But they've done a good job, to be fair. I've got to give them that." "From Seville to Granada, in the dark silence of the night," an absent-minded voice started singing out of tune right above his head. Amazed, the dog opened both eyes completely, and just two steps away he saw a man's leg lying across a white stool. The trouser leg and long underwear on it were pulled up, and the naked yellow shin was smeared with dried blood and iodine. Holy saints, thought the dog. That must be where I bit him. I did that. They'll beat me now.
You can hear the serenading and the clashing of the swords.
Why did you bite the doctor, you tramp, hey? Why did you break the glass, hm? The dog whimpered pitifully. All right, you've come round. Now lie still, you blockhead. Filip Filipovich, how did you manage to lure such a nervous dog in here? Asked a pleasant man's voice, and the underwear sprang back down into place. There was a smell of tobacco and bottles started jangling in the cupboard. With kindness, the only possible way to deal with a living creature. Terror's useless for dealing with an animal, whatever level of development it might be at. I've always said that, I still say it, and I always will. They're wrong to think that terror will do them any good. No, sir. No, sir. It won't. No matter what color it is. White, red, or even brown. Terror totally paralyzes the nervous system. Xena! I bought this rascal some crack of salami for a ruble and 40 kopecks. Make sure you feed him when he stops feeling sick. Pieces of glass crunched as they were swept up, and a woman's voice remarked flirtatiously. Crack of salami? Good lord, you ought to have bought him offcuts for 20 kopecks at the meat shop. I could eat crack of myself.
Just you try. Eat it yourself indeed. It's poison for the human stomach. A big grown-up girl like you, and you still stick any old muck in your mouth like a child. Don't you dare. I warn you. Neither I nor Dr. Bomenthal will take any trouble over you when you get stomach cramps.
All who dare say that another here compares with you.
While this all went on, the entire apartment was filled with gentle staccato ringing sounds, and every now and then there was the sound of voices far away in the hallway. The telephone rang. Xena disappeared. Filip Filipovich dropped the butt of his papirosa into a bucket, buttoned up his white coat, smoothed down his bushy moustache in front of the little mirror on the wall, and called to the dog. All right, all right. We are going to see some patients now. But the dog stood up on unsteady legs, swayed and shivered, but quickly recovered and set off after Filip Filipovich's flapping coat hem. The dog crossed the narrow corridor again, only now he saw that it was brightly lit from above by a round rosette. But when the lacquered door opened and the dog walked into the luxuriously appointed study with Filip Filipovich, he was blinded by all the finery. First of all, the entire room was a blaze of light, burning on the moulded ceiling, burning on the desk, burning on the wall and in the glass panes of the cupboards. The light flooded over 1,001 different objects, the most intriguing of which was an immense owl sitting on a branch on the wall. Lie down, Filip Filipovich ordered. A carved door opposite the first opened, and in came the man who'd been bitten, looking very handsome now in the bright light, young, with a pointed little beard. He held out a sheet of paper and said, "A return patient." He immediately disappeared without another sound, and Filip Filipovich parted the skirts of his white coat, sat down at the immense desk, and suddenly became exceptionally solemn and imposing.
"No, this isn't a clinic. This is some other kind of place I've ended up in," the dog thought in confusion, and he collapsed onto the patterned carpet beside the heavy leather divan. "And we'll get to the bottom of that owl, too."
The door opened gently, and someone came in who startled the dog so much that he yelped, but very timidly.
"Quiet! My, my, but I can hardly recognize you, my dear fellow."
The new arrival bowed to Filip Filipovich in embarrassed respect.
"You're a sorcerer, a wonder-worker, Professor," he said bashfully.
"Take your trousers off, my dear fellow," Filip Filipovich ordered, standing up.
"Lord Jesus Christ," thought the dog. "Just look at that freak."
The freak's head was covered with hair that was entirely green and shot through with rusty tobacco colour at the back. Wrinkles had spread right across the freak's face, but his complexion was as pink as a baby's. His left leg didn't bend at the knee, it had to be dragged across the carpet, but the right one skipped about like the leg on a child's toy nutcracker. A precious stone peered out like an eye from the lapel of his quite magnificent jacket. The dog was so fascinated that he even stopped feeling sick.
"Oof, oof," he yelped gently. "Quiet.
How do you sleep, my dear fellow?"
"Are we alone, Professor? It's indescribable," the visitor said shyly. "Parole d'honneur. Nothing like it for 25 years.
The fellow grasped the button of his trousers. "Would you believe it, Professor? Every night, hordes of naked young women. I'm positively enchanted. You're a magician." Philip Filipovich hemmed absent-mindedly, gazing into his visitor's pupils. The visitor finally managed his buttons and removed his striped trousers to reveal drawers, the like of which had never been seen before. They were cream-coloured, embroidered with black silk cats, and smelled of perfume. The dog couldn't contain himself at the sight of the cats, and he barked, making the fellow jump.
"Aye! I'll beat you. Don't be afraid, he doesn't bite."
"I don't bite?" the dog thought in amazement. The visitor dropped a little envelope out of his trousers. There was a picture on it of a beautiful girl with her hair hanging loose. The fellow jumped, leaned down, picked her up, and blushed furiously.
"You be careful now," Filip Filipovich said in stern admonishment, wagging a finger at him. "Just be sure you don't go overdoing it."
I'm not over..." the subject muttered in embarrassment, continuing to get undressed. "I only tried it, dear Professor, for an experiment."
"Well then, and what was the result?"
Filip Filipovich asked sternly. The subject waved his hand ecstatically.
I swear to God, Professor, nothing like it for 25 years. The last time was in 1899 in Paris, on Rue de la Paix."
"And why have you gone green?" The visitor's face darkened.
"That damned Girkist! You couldn't possibly imagine, Professor, what those good-for-nothings palmed off on me as dye. Just look at it," the fellow muttered, looking around for a mirror. "They deserve a sound beating," he added truculently.
"What am I going to do now, Professor?" he whined.
Shave your head to the skin."
"Professor, it will grow grey again. And apart from that, I won't be able to show my face at work. And this is the third day I haven't gone already. Professor, if only you would invent a way to rejuvenate the hair too."
"One thing at a time, my dear fellow. One thing at a time," muttered Filip Filipovich.
He leaned down and his eyes glittered as he inspected his patient's naked belly.
"Well now, that's charming. Everything's in perfect order. To be honest, I wasn't actually expecting quite such a good result."
"Much blood and many songs, much blood and many songs."
"Get dressed, my dear fellow."
"I sing to her whose charms surpass them all."
The patient joined in with a voice that jangled like a frying pan, positively glowing as he started to get dressed. When he had made himself decent, hopping up and down and propagating the smell of perfume through the air, he counted out a bundle of white notes to Filip Filipovich and started shaking him affectionately by both hands.
"You don't need to come for another 2 weeks," said Filip Filipovich. "But even so, please, be careful."
"Professor!"
the fellow's voice exclaimed in ecstasy from behind the door.
"Don't worry about a thing."
The voice giggled voluptuously and disappeared. A ringing sound jangled airily through the apartment. The lacquered door opened, the bitten one came in, handed Filip Filipovich a sheet of paper, and announced,
"The age given is incorrect. Probably 54 or 55.
The cardiac sounds are slightly muffled." He disappeared, and his place was taken by a rustling lady with her hat cocked dashingly to one side and a glittering necklace on her flabby, crinkly neck. She had terrible black bags under her eyes, and her cheeks were as rosy pink as a doll's. She was extremely nervous.
"Madam, how old are you?"
Filip Filipovich asked her very sternly. The lady was so frightened that she even blanched under her crust of rouge.
"Professor, I swear, if only you knew what a drama..."
"How old are you, madam?"
Philip Filippovich repeated even more sternly. My word of honour, well, 45.
Madam, Philip Filippovich cried, people are waiting for me. Don't delay them, please. You're not the only one.
The lady's breast heaved violently.
I'll only tell you as a luminary of science, but I swear, it's so terrible. How old are you?
Philip Filippovich asked in shrill fury, and his spectacles glinted.
51, the lady replied, squirming in terror.
Take your panties off, madam, Philip Filippovich said with a sigh of relief and pointed to a tall white scaffold in the corner.
I swear, Professor,
the lady muttered, unfastening some kinds of studs on her belt with trembling fingers,
that this Alphonse... I speak to you as if you were my confessor.
From Seville to Granada.
Philip Filippovich began singing absent-mindedly and pressed the pedal of the marble washstand. There was a sound of running water.
I swear to God,
said the lady, and patches of live colour forced their way through the artificial ones on her cheeks.
I know that this is my final passion. He's such a scoundrel. Oh, Professor. He's a card sharp. The whole of Moscow knows it. He can't resist a single vicious little milliner. After all, he's so devilishly young.
The lady muttered and tossed a crumpled wisp of lace out from under her rustling skirts. The dog's head began feeling completely fuzzy, and everything in it began tumbling over and over.
Well, damn the lot of you,
he thought dimly, resting his head on his paws and slipping into a doze out of a sense of shame.
I'm not even going to try to understand what's going on here. I won't understand it anyway.
He was roused by a ringing sound and saw Philip Filippovich toss some kind of shiny little tubes into a basin. The lady with patchy cheeks was clutching her hands to her breast and gazing in hope at Philip Filippovich. He frowned solemnly, sat down at the desk and made a note of something.
Madam, I'm going to implant a monkey's ovaries in you,
he declared and gave her a stern look.
Professor, are they really a monkey's?
Yes, Philip Filippovich replied intransigently.
When is the operation?
The lady asked in weak voice, turning pale.
From Seville to Granada.
On Monday. You'll go into the clinic in the morning. My assistant will prepare you.
I don't want to go into the clinic. Can't you do it here, Professor?
Well, you see, I only perform operations here in extreme cases. It would be very expensive. 500 rubles.
I accept, Professor.
The water started tinkling again. A feathered hat fluttered, then a head as bold as a plate appeared and embraced Philip Filippovich. The dog was dozing, his nausea had passed. The dog was enjoying the soothing, calm feeling in his side and the warmth. He even took a short nap and had time for a brief fragment of a pleasant dream in which he ripped a whole bunch of feathers out of that owl's tail. Then an agitated voice yelped right above his head.
I'm too well known in Moscow, Professor. What am I going to do?
Good grief! Philip Filippovich exclaimed indignantly.
This is impossible! You must control yourself.
How old is she?
14, Professor. You understand, the publicity will ruin me. I'm supposed to receive a foreign assignment in a few days' time.
Well now, I'm not a lawyer, my dear fellow. You can wait for 2 years and marry her.
I am married, Professor.
Ah, good grief, good grief. Doors opened, faces came and went, instruments rattled in the cupboard, and Philip Filippovich worked indefatigably.
A bawdy apartment, thought the dog. But it's so good here. Only what the hell did he want me for? Is he really going to let me live here? What a crank! Why, with a blink of his eyes, he could get himself the kind of dog that would knock spots off me. But then perhaps I am handsome. That must be my good fortune. But that owl's a vile creature, so high and mighty.
The dog finally woke up completely late in the evening, when the ringing had stopped, at the precise moment when the door admitted some special visitors. There were four of them all at once. All young men, and all dressed very modestly. "What do these types want?" the dog thought in surprise. Filip Filipovich greeted his guests in a far more hostile manner. He stood beside the desk and looked at the people who had come in like a general eyeing the enemy. The nostrils of his hawk-like nose flared. The newcomers shuffled their feet on the carpet. "We've come to see you, Professor," said the one who had a shock of thick, curly hair towering up almost 20 centimeters above his head, "concerning the following matter. Gentlemen, you should know better than to walk around without galoshes in this weather," Filip Filipovich interrupted him in a didactic tone. "In the first place, you'll catch a cold, and in the second, you've trailed dirt across my carpets, and all my carpets are Persian." The one with the tall shock of hair fell silent, and all four of them gaped at Filip Filipovich in amazement. The silence lasted for several seconds, broken only by the tapping of Filip Filipovich's fingers against a painted wooden bowl on the desk. "In the first place, we're not gentlemen," the most youthful of the four with a complexion like a peach eventually declared. "In the first place," said Filip Filipovich, interrupting him as well, "are you a man or a woman?" The foursome fell silent again and opened their mouths wide. This time it was the first one, with a shock of hair, who recovered first. "What difference does it make, comrade?" he said haughtily. "I am a woman," the peachy youth in the leather jacket confessed, blushing deeply. For some reason the youth's blush was repeated rather intensely by another of the newcomers, a fair-haired man in a tall Astrakhan hat. "In that case you may keep your cap on, but I would request you, my kind sir, to remove your headgear," Filip Filipovich said forcefully. "I'm not your kind sir," the fair-haired man replied sharply, removing his hat. "We've come to see you," the man with the shock of black hair began again. "First of all, who's we?" "We're the new house committee for our building," the black-haired man said with restrained fury. "I am Schwander, she is Vyazimskaya, he is Comrade Pistrukhin, and he is Zharovkin. And so we..."
"Are you the ones who have been moved into Fyodor Pavlovich Sablin's apartment?"
"We are," replied Schwander.
"My God, Kalabukov House is done for," Filip Filipovich exclaimed in despair, throwing his hands up in the air.
"What do you find so funny, Professor?" Schwander asked indignantly.
"There is nothing funny about it. I'm in total despair," shouted Filip Filipovich. "Now what's going to happen to the steam heating?"
"Are you making fun of us, Professor Preobrazhensky? On what business have you come to see me? Tell me as quickly as you can. I'm about to have dinner."
"We, the administration of the building," Schwander began with hatred in his voice, "have come to see you following a general meeting of the tenants in our building. The standing question at which concerned the consolidation of the apartments in our building."
"Who was standing on whom?" shouted Filip Filipovich. "Make an effort to express your thoughts more clearly."
"The question of consolidation was standing."
"Enough!
I understand. Are you aware that under the decree of 12th August my apartment is exempted from any and all consolidations and resettlements?"
"We are," replied Schwander. "But the General Assembly, having considered your case, has reached the conclusion that on the whole you're occupying an excessive area. Absolutely excessive. You live in 7 rooms on your own."
"I live and work in 7 rooms on my own," replied Filip Filipovich. "And I should like to have an 8th. I need it badly for a library."
The foursome were dumbfounded.
"An 8th?
said the light-haired man, who was now hatless. "Now, that's a really good one."
"This is unspeakable,"
exclaimed the youth who had turned out to be a woman.
"I have a reception room, and note, that is also the library. A dining room, my study, that's 3. An examination room, 4. An operating theatre, 5. My bedroom, 6, and the servants' room, 7. Generally speaking, it's not enough. But anyway, that's not important. My apartment is exempt, and there's an end to the conversation."
I may go and have my dinner. I'm sorry, said the fourth visitor, who looked like a sturdy beetle.
I'm sorry, Schwander interrupted him. It is precisely on account of the dining room and the examination room that we have come to talk to you. The General Assembly requests you to give up the dining room voluntarily as a matter of labor discipline. Nobody in Moscow has dining rooms. Not even Isadora Duncan, the woman shouted resoundingly.
A change came over Filip Filipovich, as a consequence of which his face began gently flushing crimson, and he waited without saying another word to see what would come next.
And the examination room, too, Schwander continued. The examination room can perfectly well be combined with the study.
Ugh, Filip Filipovich said in a strange sort of voice. And where am I supposed to take my food?
In the bedroom,
all four of them replied in chorus. Filip Filipovich's crimson tone acquired a rather greyish tinge.
Take my food in the bedroom, he said in a slightly muffled voice. Read in the examination room. Get dressed in the reception room. Operate in the servants' room and examine people in the dining room. It's quite possible that Isadora Duncan might do that sort of thing. Perhaps she takes dinner in her study and sacrifices rabbits in the bathroom.
Perhaps.
But I am not Isadora Duncan,
he bellowed abruptly, and his crimson tone turned to yellow.
I am going to dine in the dining room and operate in the operating theatre. Inform the General Assembly of that. And now, I respectfully request you to go about your business and allow me to take my food where all normal people take it, that is, in the dining room, not in the hallway and not in the nursery.
In that case, Professor, in view of your obstinate opposition, said the agitated Schwander, we shall lodge a complaint about you at the highest levels.
Ah, is that so?
Said Filip Filipovich, his voice assuming a suspiciously polite tone.
Would you mind waiting for just one moment?
That's my kind of guy, the dog thought in delight.
Just like me. Oh, now he'll give them such a chomp. Oh, a really good snap.
I don't know yet exactly how, but he'll get them all right.
Bite them! Grab that long-legged one this instant just above the top of his boot, by the tendon under the knee.
Filip Filipovich tapped on the phone, then picked up the mouthpiece and spoke into it as follows.
If you please.
Yes.
Thank you. Could I speak to Pyotr Alexandrovich, please?
Professor Preobrazhensky.
Pyotr Alexandrovich, I'm very glad to have caught you.
Thank you, I'm very well.
Pyotr Alexandrovich, your operation is being cancelled.
What?
No, cancelled completely. And so are all the other operations. I'll tell you why. I'm discontinuing my activities in Moscow and in Russia in general. A group of four people, one of them a woman dressed as a man, and two of them armed with revolvers, have just come to my apartment and terrorized me in an attempt to take part of it away from me.
"Come now, Professor,"
Schwander began, his expression changing to dismay as he spoke.
"I'm sorry. I am not able to repeat everything they said. I am no great lover of gibberish. Suffice it to say that they have suggested that I should give up my examination room, in other words, put me in the position of having to operate on you in the place I have previously used for sacrificing rabbits. Not only can I not work in such conditions, I have no right to do so. I am therefore discontinuing my activities, closing down the apartment, and leaving for Sochi. I can hand over the keys to Schwander. Let him perform the operation.
The foursome froze. The snow was melting on their boots.
What can I do? It is extremely distressing for me, too.
What?
Oh, no, Pyotr Alexandrovich. Oh, no. I can't take any more of this. My patience is exhausted. This is the second incident since August.
What?
As you wish. That would be something at least. But just one condition. Whatever you like, whenever you like, from whomever you like, but it has to be the kind of document that means that neither Schwander nor anyone else can even approach the door of my apartment. A definitive document, factual, authentic, armor-plated, without even any mention at all of my name. Of course, for them, I am dead. Yes, yes. By all means. From whom? Well, that's a different matter. Good. I'm just handing him the phone. Would you mind? Filip Filipovich said to Schwander and his servant's hiss. Someone would like to have a word with you.
Come now, Professor,
said Schwander, flushing and fading by turns. You have perverted our meaning. I would ask you, please, not to use such expressions. Confused and embarrassed, Schwander took the phone and said,
Hello?
Yes?
Chairman of the House Committee. But we were acting in accordance with the rules. The Professor's position is already absolutely exceptional as it is. We know about the work he has done. We wanted to leave him an entire 5 rooms. Very well. In that case, all right.
Completely red in the face, he put down the receiver and turned round. He cut them down to size. That's my boy, the dog thought admiringly. Does he know some special word or something, then?
Well, now you can beat me as much as you like, but I'm not leaving.
The other three gaped wide-mouthed at the castigated Schwander.
It's a disgrace, Schwander said timidly. If there had been a debate just now, the woman began growing agitated so that her cheeks blushed crimson, I would have demonstrated to Pyotr Alexandrovich.
I'm sorry, perhaps you might care to open that debate this very moment? Filip Filipovich inquired politely. The woman's eyes blazed.
I understand your irony, Professor. We'll be going now. Only, as the head of the building's cultural department, I would like to offer you...
At this point, the woman pulled out several brightly coloured magazines wet with snow from under the front of her coat.
The chance to buy several magazines to support the children of Germany, 50 kopecks each.
No, I won't take any, Filip Filipovich replied curtly after squinting briefly at the magazines. Their faces expressed absolute amazement, and the woman's face bloomed cranberry red.
Why won't you take any?
I don't want them.
Don't you sympathize with the children of Germany?
I am indifferent to them.
You think 50 kopecks is too much?
No.
Then why not?
I don't want them. There was a brief silence.
You know, Professor,
the young woman said with a heavy sigh, if you didn't have a European reputation and you hadn't been interceded for in the most outrageous fashion... The light-haired man tugged on the edge of her jacket, but she waved him away.
By individuals whom I am sure we shall expose in their true colours in good time, you ought to have been arrested.
And what for? Filip Filipovich inquired curiously.
You hate the proletariat,
the woman said fervently. Yes, I am not fond of the proletariat. Filip Filipovich agreed sadly and pressed a button. Somewhere a bell rang. The door into the corridor opened. Zina, called Filip Filipovich. Serve dinner. Would you mind, gentlemen? The foursome left the study in silence, walked through the reception room in silence, walked through the hallway in silence, and then there was the sound of the front door slamming resoundingly behind them. The dog stood up on his hind legs and performed a kind of salaam to Filip Filipovich.